I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Confessions of a Debut Novelist with me, your host, Chloe Timms. This week, I'm talking to Kate Martin about her young adult novel, Are You Okay, Elliot Hart? Kate is a high school English teacher in Cheshire. She grew up in Lancashire, having adventures with her two older brothers and being a bit of a tomboy. Her writing is inspired by the difficulties of being a teenager and creating stories with empathy and hope. In this episode, we discuss how Kate embodied her teenage characters to find their voice, the important messages in her story, and how she fits writing into her busy teaching career. But first, here's Kate with an extract from Are You Okay, Elliot Hart?
I've spent the last few years making myself invisible. Many teenagers are blessed with unique talents. They speak multiple languages or belch the alphabet backwards. Me, I've spent the last few years perfecting my own superpower, the ability to make myself disappear. Over the years, I've adapted to my surroundings and taught myself how to vanish, like an animal being hunted in the wild. I fine-tuned techniques like staring at my shoes, hiding in the school toilet, and burying my head in a book. Right now, I'm practicing the art of staring at a notice on the wall while I wait for my appointment with Mrs. Spencer, the school counsellor. Matchstick! I'm not sideways. And Josh McBride's leering smile is in my face. The same mocking expression mirrored by his friend, Lewis Pretty. Their laughter echoes down the corridor as they slope off. It would be fair to say that my invisibility training still needs work. Are you okay? Felicity Hooper has appeared to my right, studying the same notice from the drama department. There's a play every year, and every year I dream of auditioning, but I don't even have the confidence to hold a conversation with the girl standing next to me. The really pretty girl standing next to me, to be specific. You're in my history class. Yes, it's Elliot. Elliot Hart. Who do I think I am, James Bond? Well, Elliot Hart, are you okay? She grabs the pen attached to the board and scribbles her name on the audition sheet. Felicity Hooper is amazing.
Hi, Kate. Welcome to the podcast. It's really nice to have you on today to talk about your new young adult novel.
Thank you, Chloe. I'm excited to be here.
Can you start us off with a brief summary of what Are You Okay, Elliot Hart is about?
Yes, it's about two teenage boys, Elliot Hart and Josh McBride, both 15. Elliot lives with his mum, who suffers from depression and agoraphobia, and Josh lives with his mum and younger sisters and his stepdad, and his stepdad is abusive. And it looks at how both boys deal with their challenges that they have at home, but in very different ways. So Elliot is shy and reserved and wants to hide away, whereas Josh is angry and frustrated and deals with it in a much more aggressive way. And then circumstances happen that end up that they go on a trip to the city. They go on a train to the city and they kind of get forced together a little bit and kind of see a different side to each other and reasons why they might be how they are. And then there's a few a couple of twists, which I best keep a secret.
Yeah, we'll keep them quiet. Can you remember where your first kind of spark of inspiration came from, or what was it that kind of gave you that idea for this novel?
Yeah, it's a really personal one. When I was 38, I reckon, I realised my mum had been ill for most of my life. Since I was about 14, she had a catalogue of really awful illnesses and lifelong illnesses. And it was only my late 30s where I realised that it probably impacted me quite a bit. I was angry and jealous and sad and hurt and wasn't comfortable with all those feelings. So I needed an outlet. I needed something that would just give me like a moment's peace in the day. And I think you've mentioned this, but I found Tim Clare's podcast.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, it was The Couch to 80,000 Words. And it was a little writing activity for just 15 minutes a day. And I had two really young children at that point, I think about maybe 3 and 5. And I would just go off. I'd just tell my husband I need 15 minutes. I need just a bit of peace. And I'd get my notepad and I'd listen to his writing activity. And I did it. And I just went all the way through it and just had that moment of peace. So it's not a coincidence that Elliot's a young carer. Like, it was definitely, it was me channeling some stuff in my life. And I just probably wanted to draw attention to young carers and teenage young carers and people that have kind of carrying a bit more extra baggage as they go to school. So by the end of doing all those activities, I had Elliot formed. And then another issue that gets to me because of my job is the bullying side. More importantly, the bullies. So how we can sometimes dismiss them and just see them as an angry teenager and what an awful character they are, when even though it doesn't excuse it, maybe a little bit of looking behind the reasons of why people act like they act might help a little bit. So then Josh came, and then I thought, well, I've started this, I might as well try and finish it.
Yeah, and great that you have. I wondered whether when you were working on these writing exercises with the Tim Clare podcast, was it Elliot's voice that came to you first, or was it that you knew you wanted to write about a young carer?
No, it was Elliot's voice. Towards the end of the activities, you start creating a character a little bit more in detail. And yeah, it was Elliot, and it always was. And he was always going to be quietly strong. He was always going to be strong in a sense that he kept himself together every day, and he got up and he got himself dressed and he got himself to school and he did everything. He was always that way. And he's always a boy as well. A few people have asked me about that, about having two teenage boys, and he was always a boy. It's weird, isn't it? It just was.
Yeah, you can't question these things, you just got to go with them.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned already, obviously, with your background and also with your job, it was really important for you to give voice to these characters that were going through a particularly difficult time. Were you nervous about writing it for a younger audience? I know we're talking sort of teenagers, and you've got experiences working with them. Did you feel like that added a bit of pressure because you had to handle it in a particular way?
Yeah, it's weird. I never wrote the book to be published, which means that all my nerves have come afterwards. I kind of started it, and I have to handwrite all my first drafts. So I just had notepads upon notepads and didn't question anything. And it was only when it was all finished and I left it for a year, and I thought, well, what am I going to do with it? I'm either going to leave it on a shelf or try and get it published. Since then, I've probably been a bit more nervous about it, and now it's getting close to going out into the wider world. I'm aware that tackling such tough issues can bring different responses. It can, because people will have their own personal experiences with bullying and depression and mental health and so on. So I'm probably a tiny bit more nervous now than when writing it was very just me, didn't care. Just me in a notepad,
yeah.
just scribbling away. as it gets closer to the release date, I'm aware, but I don't think it's a bad thing having the issues discussed. I don't, you know, it brings up discussions that I don't remember when I was a teenager. I don't remember young carers being discussed. So it definitely prompts some important discussions that might be needed.
Mm. And I personally, I don't think you've got anything to worry about, because I think it was written in a really empathetic way. So I certainly don't think anyone's going to have a strike issue with it.
I hope so.
Was it always an obvious choice for you to write for young adults? Because I know you're a teacher and you work with them. What is it, do you think, that appeals to you about writing for teenagers and young adults?
I think it definitely was an unconscious choice that isn't a surprise. I've been a teacher of teenagers for about 18 years now. It's what I see, it's what I do. So it did make sense. I think teenagers is a tricky time. Life is tricky for all of us, but when you're a teenager, you still have to go through all the stuff that we have to go through as adults. You still have grief, and you still have loneliness and anxiety and depression and everything that we might have to deal with. But when you're a teenager, you don't quite know who you are yet, and you're navigating all this other stuff and trying to work out where you fit and what you're about, and wanting to be liked or wanting to fit in or not fit in. And when you put the extra stuff that life can throw at you, no matter what age, I think that's when it can become quite difficult. I've seen so many instances of teenagers in lots of different ways, and they always impress me with their strength. They always impress me with their dignity in tough times and their humour in tough times. Mm. So it doesn't surprise me that I wanted to write about teenagers. I admire them. I think they're amazing. What they sometimes lack is that they can't see that how they're feeling right now won't last forever. That what's happening right now, it's consuming for them a lot of the time. So if they are going through tough times, they can't quite, which we might be able to do when we're a bit older, see that you will get through this, you know, it will happen. So for the moment, I think I'm a teenage, a young adult writer. I find them, they're my inspiration, really.
Yeah. No, it's easy to see why, obviously, when you're surrounded by them all day, every day, and you're seeing kind of that. I guess maybe some adults, if they're not working with teenagers, perhaps see them in quite a stereotypical way.
Yeah.
But you're seeing all aspects of their life. And I think that certainly comes across in your book as well. One thing I thought you did really well, which I think is incredibly hard to get right, is the dialogue. And I don't know whether you found it easy. I mean, it certainly reads as if you did. Do you think that was informed by your teaching? I mean, I guess the temptation is to put in kind of slang and then it dates very quickly, but certainly it reads very authentically. Did you have anyone younger look at your work to kind of go, oh God, this is cringe, don't put that in, you know?
Oh, I'm really pleased you said that, because it's something that I've just done. I haven't studied it, I haven't you know, done writing courses or anything. I must inhabit like teenage boys or something. I literally just became Elliot or Josh. So I was just like, right, now I'm Elliot and now I'm Josh. And I questioned whether I'd get it right, and I questioned it and looked over it. And you're exactly right, I didn't go for slang too much because it would date it. Slang changes so quickly, and I see them speaking such different ways year by year, never mind, you know, further in the past. So I avoided putting it in a set time. I know kind of what time it is, and there's a couple of references to songs and films, but I avoided putting it in a set time because I knew that it would date so quickly, and I knew that I could not voice a really authentic at this present day teenager. I could just do a general teenager kind of way. I really did, and I will see how it goes and how people respond, but I honestly just became a teenager. how would they think? I did I treated myself to a little course yesterday with Patrice, I'm going to forget her name, Patrice something, a young adult author, and she was talking about voice and how much you look into it. and how people do Vice. And I was like, oh, I just decided I was them. So Josh is really angry. So he has a lot of like shorter phrases and defensive and Elliot's quieter and calmer. So he would have a bit longer and a bit more like needed reassurance and so I've no idea. We'll see.
I was going to ask you because both obviously the chapters alternate between their voices and both are in first person. And you said you kind of inhabited both. How did you, I suppose you've already partly answered this already, but how did you make their voices distinct when you're writing? Because I guess you're thinking, in my head, I mean, it must be quite a challenge because they're both the same age. They're both boys. They're both at the same school. So similar kind of upbringing, obviously different home lives and home difficulties. So how did you do it consciously or did you find it kind of came automatically to you to make them so distinct?
I think it helped by they were such different characters. It did come, I did it kind of subconsciously. But it did help that they are very different characters. Josh, throughout most of the book, is so angry. But it just came across differently. He would speak differently and he would interrupt more and he would be more standoffish and he wouldn't use the same vocab like Elliot would, because Elliot is different. He reads a lot, he's quite isolated, and it was definitely subconscious. It wasn't done in any way or crafted or like you said, they come from similar, they grew up in the same village and they go to the same school, so I couldn't really change the voice and accent or dialect like that. So the only way I could change the voice was emotions, and that's why it was first person's easier. The only way I could do it is that Josh is just bubbling most of the time and just annoyed, and just do it that way. I think I'd find it much harder, and maybe I'll practice this later on in life, but third person, I think I'd find it much harder to get things across when you can't just like be the voice inside the head.
So you never attempted any third person while you were writing, though?
Not for this book. Not for a dual narrative with two. My head can't quite get across, because the book's a lot to do with empathy. I can't quite get across if I could deal with their emotions. They act so differently on the outside to what's going on the inside a lot of the time that I haven't done it yet. Maybe one day I'll try third person.
It struck me as I was reading how really it was so well paced, so well plotted. I don't know. I was kind of picturing in my head like charts and the kind of technicalities of planning. So are you a big planner, or did it come more naturally to you? How did it kind of evolve the story?
Chloe, I'm going to disappoint you totally here. I didn't plan it at all.
Well, maybe not to the point, more impressed. Like, I'm so impressed you said that now.
For my sins, I didn't plan it. I knew, the only thing that I knew was the end chapter. That's it. I knew the end chapter, and all I did, and it caused a lot of trouble, and I do not advise this at all. All I did was plan the next chapter once I'd written that one. And I'd be like, well, where should we go next? And what should we see next? Again, because I wasn't writing it to be published. So it was just a joy. It was an absolute joy. I find in the second book much harder, because it was just a joy. It was just me. And it was just like, oh, where should I take them next? And what should happen? And I want to show this. So maybe they could do this. And then I shelved it. Unfortunately, my mum passed away when I was writing the book. So I just needed then to put it away. And then I picked it up a year later, and it was a mess. It didn't all make sense, and it didn't all fit. So what I did, I'll send you a picture at one point if I can, Chloe. What I did was, because I'm so old school and I hate technology, is I got two big cork boards and post-it notes and pins, and I wrote on every post-it note and pinned it, and then tried to see if I could make some sense of this and rearrange it, which meant I had to go back and rewrite quite a lot because my ramblings didn't make much sense. I've gone for plotting a little bit more for the second book, and as much as it's probably going to help me in the long run, I don't enjoy it as much. I like that freedom.
Say that.
Yeah, it's a freedom of just like, where are we going to go? What's going to happen?
But I'm guessing, and I'm not going to give away the ending or anything like that, but I'm guessing if you knew the end, you did know the twists, right? So you could drop the seeds of that throughout the earlier chapters.
But the twist, yeah, a little bit. So the twist.
So that wasn't something that came later in the planning. That must have been in kind of from early on.
The twist came later in the plan. I can't say too much. Mm. I needed something to happen, and I didn't know how it was going to happen. So the twist came about 2/3 into writing. So it wasn't at the beginning, or yeah. I was nervous about the twist, if I'm honest, as well, as you can imagine. So then I had to go back. I gave myself too much work, Chloe. I really did. Because then once I decided that, and I decided it as I was going to sleep, like you do. So I was going to sleep. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. I then had to go back and twist a few things and then do it. So it was a very much a character driven. I had the characters and they were up to their own good. and then I had the points. I had the messages. I wanted the young care and the bullying. And then the rest was back and forth a little bit.
Well, you'd never know. I was definitely imagining you there with a spreadsheet or with your notepad or something. I want to go back now to talk about your kind of the beginnings, really, of your writing journey. And you said that you got into writing as a way of escaping kind of what was going on in your own head and giving yourself time alone. But had you always loved writing? Had you always thought, oh, maybe one day, or was it something that came later in life?
I think it came later in life. I hear other authors say, you know, as a child, I always knew I wanted to write and I wanted to be an author. I don't think, I definitely had stories and bits everywhere. I loved English. I studied it all the way up to master's. I then became an English teacher and I spent my life just looking at words and looking at other people's and looking at the enjoyment that way. I always wanted one book that I've written on a shelf. I never really went publishing way or to be an author as such. I just kind of thought, wouldn't it be nice, you know, to have like your name on a cover, and I just wanted one copy just on my shelf and think that way. So it was probably more love of words rather than I wanted to be an author. That never really happened till later on, and I thought, oh, I can do this. It probably comes with a bit of self-doubt, doesn't it? And I never believed I could. I never believed I would be able to. I never believed that I had the talent to. So, it's quite a classic teacher thing, isn't it? I could teach it all, but I don't think I can do it. And then I realised that, maybe I could.
At what point did you think you'd got sort of so far? And obviously you said you were writing for yourself. At what point did you think, oh, maybe I've got something here? Maybe I should do something with it.
It was probably after my mum passed away. It gives you a spur. It really does. I think I thought, sod it. You know, let's do this. You know, you've got a rough first draft. Let's go and achieve all dreams you might have lurking somewhere or what might be go there. So, I took it down and looked at it and just thought, right, I'm going to try and see if anybody wants this.
And we've already talked about your teaching career. Before I ask about your kind of how your writing and teaching fit together, does anyone at your school or do your pupils know that you've written a book?
So this is another hurdle I have to get over, and that's been comfortable at school talking about it. What do they know? Yes, but not all of them. Just if one of them has found out or it's come up in discussion. Mm. I will have to become comfortable with talking about my own book to my own pupils.
Yeah, yeah.
I will. I know that. Because otherwise, why write it? Do you know what I mean? I wrote it for teenagers and I'm surrounded by teenagers. So a few of my classes know. It's not big news just yet. I'm hoping for the idea that it will creep through rather than I have to do any big announcement or anything. That they'll just, teenagers tend to talk, so that it will just kind of,
they'll
like,
be googling you, I'm sure.
Oh god, isn't it weird how it makes me feel nervous?
I know
It's just but crazy. Wait,
do your colleagues not know? They do know. I'm surprised they haven't, you know, pushed for you to be doing an assembly or something, introducing a book.
I know, in time. I do this face every time they like ask. In time, I will, because otherwise it's pointless writing it.
Yeah. And,
you know, there's people.
Honestly, I feel like if I'd been at school and I found out my teacher had written a novel, that would have been the coolest. I mean, I was a bit of a nerd at school, but that to me, that would have been so cool. I would have been like there with my book and my pen being like, please sign me a copy. And, you know, that would have been amazing.
They will. They're lovely. They will. Yeah. They'll love it. I just need to be. I just feel so self-conscious.
You must have kids in your class that are like talented at writing, and you know they may see that as an inspiration for them to go down that career path as well.
Definitely, and I that's why I will become more comfortable with it, because I don't remember anybody at school really saying, you know, oh, you've got. So a couple that have found out have already come and given me like their first chapters and let me look at it. So there's definitely an opportunity to go like, yes, you've got this talent. Like, I was really old when I realised that I could do this. I'm not really old, middle-aged. and you're so young. Can you imagine at that age to be told by someone, you've got a talent, go for it, you can do this. And I found some stuff, because Twitter's a great community, isn't it, Chloe? And I found some stuff on publishing for teenagers, and I sent that out to everyone. So it will happen naturally. I'm just not going in all guns blazing just yet. So I think it will all happen over time.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So how does your writing fit around your teaching? Because obviously teaching's a hugely demanding job. I used to be a primary school teacher myself, and I crazily did NaNoWriMo 1 year while I was doing my teacher training, which was, in hindsight, the stupidest idea ever. But how do you fit your writing around your teaching?
I really struggle, as you can imagine. I do. And it's definitely something that I don't know how it's going to get better, but hopefully it will, because writing just seems to come to the bottom of the list all the time. It's teaching and planning and marking and kids and day-to-day chores, and then writing just nestles in at the bottom. Elliot Hart was written in very much 15-minute stints at night time in my bed on a notepad. And it was just that consistency. It was just don't give up, pick it up and write the next bit and the next bit and the next bit. So it's snatching time. I wrote a little bit just before we're doing this podcast now on a scrappy notepad, and it is as the kids get a bit older, my kids, it gets a bit easier. But it's snatching time. I don't have any routine at all. It is just, if you've got half an hour, if you've got 20 minutes, then scribble. And luckily, because I handwrite first drafts, I can just pick up a notepad and just scribble ideas down. And one of the marvelous things about writing is you just keep going, just add that extra word, even if it's a sentence, even if it's a paragraph, you'll get there eventually. So it's just picking it up.
Do you feel that you've learned to write that way just out of sheer necessity? You're quite good at kind of picking up scraps of time here and there to get things down, or do you think, or was that a struggle to begin with, or is just, you're just used to writing in that way?
I don't know if it's necessarily a struggle, it's just an annoyance. I wish I had more time.
Yeah.
I wish I won the lottery and I could just, you know, write for much longer. It's, I don't know, as much as struggle, it's just an annoyance. It's an annoyance that I can't get a routine, that I can't sit. I don't have like an office, you know what I mean? I'd love an office. I'm at the kitchen table right now. I'd love a little office and sit and write for hours. And maybe as life gets, you know, maybe if I find more balance as it goes on, I'll be able to do that. But it's just necessity. It's just what it is at the moment. I have a busy life and I just have to write when I can, and eventually it will get done.
So talk to me now about your book deal, because you're published with an independent press and you don't have an agent. So how did the book deal come about?
I was probably like a bit wet behind the ears on how everything worked. Again, because I wasn't really writing it with any idea of it being published, didn't really know what to do with it once I'd got a first draft, and kind of researched and found out about doing a synopsis and how to do a query letter and so on. And then I sent it to about four or five agents, and that came back with no. And I remember going out for a pub lunch with my dad and had a couple of glasses of wine and came back, and I didn't even know at that stage that you could have publishers that would, without an agent, you know, that you could send it and they would publish it and you wouldn't have to go. And for me, with the what I wanted for Elliot at heart, it fitted fine. It was like, right, well, you know, they can do all the hard work, the editing and front cover, and I don't mind doing the marketing, I don't mind talking about it and so on, so let's try that. Sent it off to about four or five and got a couple of offers. Checked that it wasn't, you know, is it Vanity Press, is it called, you know,
yeah.
Checked that it was all above board, and then Creative James Media got in touch, an American independent publisher, and yeah, it was all above board and they do it all for you. It just means you don't have, right, you know, as you would imagine, you know, the same exposure as the bigger publishers. And it fitted fine for me at that stage. That is good. I get a book published, I can get it out there my own way, I can do a bit of a marketing, I get, you know, a lot of support with the publisher, and it just, for me at that time, it was the right thing to do.
So did you research into these publishers yourself? Did you have any resources that you use, perhaps for people who are considering maybe going down the independent press route?
Yeah, definitely do a little bit of research. The main thing is just never give a penny of your own money, I would advise. You do find some ones out there that will, you know, say, well, if you put this money up front and we can do this, and it might suit some people, but for me, it would give me a red flag and it would give me a warning if they were asking for some of your money. I just researched ones. I got in touch with the authors that were already with the publisher, checked what they felt about it, and it all seemed above board, and it's been great, really. It's been a lovely little community ever since. So do your research and just watch out for the ones that want your pennies, and maybe just get in touch with the authors that are already signed with that publisher. They tend to give you an honest account of what it's like.
Yeah, that's a great idea, actually. There also seems to be a really great supportive community in the young adult online writers kind of group. So what's it been like for you in the lead up to publication, kind of meeting people and getting those contacts and making those networking and those friends?
I find it amazing. Like I said, I'm not amazing at technology and tentatively got onto Twitter when I first started writing a book, probably only about 3-4 years ago. And I can't get over how supportive the writing community are on Twitter. Like, if I listed everything that I have managed to gain from just the support of other authors, and little things, another debut author got in touch and helped me do my website. I'm on the podcast with you. I've had ones that have looked at work and given tons of advice. It really is. I know a lot of authors say it, but if you could give any advice, finding other authors is just incredible. I learned so much. I learned so much about the whole process and how things work. And nobody really judged you or compares like people might expect. It really is that everybody is just rooting. For me, my experience is that everybody's just rooting for everyone else and supporting everyone else. So it has been an absolute pleasure. One of my highlights is meeting other authors, especially, you know, the ones that I've met through the writing community and Twitter. They are just some of the most generous. Even my blurb comes from an author, right, on the front of the book. So it's called a blurb, isn't it, Chloe? I'm still learning lots.
It is, yeah. Well, it's unusual because as a reader, my understanding of a blurb was the synopsis on the back. But in the writing world, a blurb is the kind of endorsement quotes, essentially, from other authors, isn't it? That's what we call blurbs, which is very confusing to give it two meanings, but there we go.
With my teacher head on, I was like, but the blurb's back of the
it's
book.
Wrong.
What do you mean the front of the book? But even that was the support from another author that I met. It's fantastic. I met the publisher I found through the Twitter and the writing community. So it is. It's a pleasure and a highlight of this whole journey is the support from other authors.
So we've got that down as a great bit of advice for anyone, especially, I mean, I think I've noticed certainly there's a big and very, I guess, close-knit YA community online. So do you have any, perhaps give me two more top tips for writers who are wanting to start writing young adult fiction?
Yeah, I would say try and spend some time with teenagers if you can. Not always easy, but if you've got nieces, nephews, sons, daughters, or any way you can spend time with them, you will work out how, if you spend time with them, you'll work out how they think and how they work most of the time. Still a few I'm trying to work out. And I would read. I'd read young adult. I read a lot of young adult. I watch a lot of young adult. It doesn't even have to be reading. If I'm feeling a little bit like I need inspiration, I will get my notepad out and watch a classic teenage film. What's 10 Things I Hate About You? I did last week when I just needed.
Good
Just, I know. When you just need that angst. Do you know what I mean? There's so much young adult angst everywhere, isn't there? And so I would read and watch. And if possible, I would try and spend some time with teenagers. See how they work.
So you mentioned then when you're kind of sitting there watching a movie or when you're kind of interacting with young adult kind of content that you sit there with your notebook. Do you do that quite often? Are you someone that's scribbling in a notebook all the time?
It's only if I need a little bit of it sounds really cheesy, doesn't it? I was going to say getting in a zone.
It's so true.
I need to kind of, if I feel like I need to just get into teenage angst, putting on a Netflix teenage film is a good way to do it because they do it well. It's full of it. So it's not necessarily I'll be writing about what's happening there or anything. It just gets me in that, like, I'm a teenager and the world is against me and I need to sort my life out.
So thinking about other things, other media with teenagers in mind, can you think of any kind of comparison novels that you would say are similar to Are You Okay, Elliot Hart, or maybe things that would appeal to readers?
Yeah, it is once I had written Elliot Hart, and you have to find, when I did those, that query list, you have to find comp, right, text to compare it to. And I couldn't find lots about young carers, which spurred me on more. I think recently more and more coming out, and there's a resource that was shared, a librarian had looked into all the books about young carers, and there's definitely more. What I read whilst writing Elliot Hart, Brian Monaghan, A Weight of a Thousand Feathers, that deals, my book is quite realism, it's real, you know, it packs, it doesn't hide much. And A Weight of a Thousand Feathers is the same. It is a teenage young carer, and it lays it all down of what can happen and how tough it is. Stuart Foster does middle grade more than young adult, but he's written a book called All the Things That Could Go Wrong, and that was really good for the bully and the victim and the dual narrative. He does exactly the same. He has a bully and the person that he's bullying, and one of them's got OCD, and it's a bit younger years than mine, but it definitely shows the two different narratives. And then it's Eve Ainsworth, who was kind enough to blurb my book. She, when I was, once I'd written Elliot Hart and trying to find books of similar themes, she's written some great books that tackle it. She's written Tender and 7 Days, one of them tackling bullying and one of them tackling young carer. So she was a joy to find, because it was kind of all the themes that I was trying to look at as well. So I think they were my big ones of the key themes that I was looking into.
Yeah, and I'll have to give a shout out now to Eve, because she's the person that brought all the 2022 debuts together, and hopefully she'll be joining me on the podcast later on. But yes, we've got to thank Eve for uniting us all.
Chloe, it was so weird, because I was wanting her anyway to like read my book and so on, and then she popped up and created that group, and I felt like it was fake. Wow. I was like, yeah. Oh, this is who. So I had to get in touch with an individual going, I'm not stalking you.
Yeah, it's weird how a lot of the time you feel like that, because I don't know about your experience, but when you're trying to ask for blurb quotes for the front cover, and you have to approach people you really admire and say, oh, I really love your work, can you please read mine? It's the most excruciating moment awful. Of the career, I think, so far.
I remember writing it and I even put in that my toes are curling right now. I even wrote that. I went, my toes are curling in my shoes right now, because this is awkward. But could you please? It is, isn't it? It's the most, it's like, yeah, please, will you read it? And if you like it, tell me that you like it.
Yeah, it's got to be done. And I have to say, everyone who I've asked, and I know a lot of people have had this experience, other writers are just so lovely, and they'll if they've got time, they'll give you a quote, and they're really nice about it if they haven't. So Eve's one of the good ones, so that's fine. So finally, are you working on anything? You've mentioned already you're working on a new book, so tell us about it.
There's a sequel coming for Elliot Hart. There is. There's reasons why. It's only going to be two. I'm stopping after two. But yes, it's coming out in October next year. So I need to get the first draft written and edited by October this year. And reasons why, you've got to be careful not to give too much away, haven't you? That I felt that this book spotlighted and highlighted a lot of difficult themes and challenges that Elliot and Josh are going through. And I wanted a second book to carry on their journey, but look at how you might then seek help. I've got to be so careful. I'm going to mess up and say something I shouldn't. So I'm trying to really be careful with my words. So this one is them a year on, so finishing school. But where their lives are now, because I didn't want a reader to get to the end of Elliot Hart and think, yes, that's me, this is me, this is me, and just not have that, oh, what happens kind of now. So I needed their journey to just go on for one more book, so they're getting one more book and then that's it.
For me, the ending is really hopeful, but I can totally see why you're keen for a sequel, because it's that what happens next, because both of their lives, their problems are not easily solved. It's, and there is no, and you know, as you've mentioned, your book is realistic. There's no kind of magic and everyone lives happily ever after at the end. You know as a reader that their lives are still going to be complicated. So I think it's a really nice idea to give you that kind of, not closure, because obviously their lives, we'd like to think are going on beyond the book. But if you're going for a kind of realistic route of what support they both might get. And also, we mentioned that their lives kind of, they collide in a way. And I know, I'm intrigued as a reader, how that, if you want to call it friendship or whatever you want to call it, goes, you know, progresses.
Yeah.
So that's great. And I'm sure other readers will feel the same. Do you have plans then for another novel outside of Elliot Hart?
I do, yeah, as all those writers do. There's too much in your head. Yes, and I'm quite excited once I get to that one. I don't know what I'll do with it or what will happen, and it's not in any kind of contract or anything. But yes, I do. I don't know how much to say. Yes, I want to. I think another teenage book which deals with different themes. And I am very tempted, and don't quote me on this if it never happens, Chloe, okay? But I'm very tempted to do a road trip, and it's going to a parent and a teenager. And I'm also thinking about setting it in the 90s.
Oh, that's fun.
So it still will tackle. This is very early, but it'll still tackle tough themes. I've got an idea what. But I like the idea of a road trip. I think it's just because I can convince my husband that I need to research, and I can get a week's peace, and I can go on a drive somewhere. I think this is where it's all coming from. It's like, it's research, and I can get a week off all duties. But that is that I've got to get Elliot Hart too, and Josh McBride will get in the title of the second one. He deserves the title as well. So he will be in. So I need to get that one written, and that comes out next year. And then after that, start thinking about the third one.
Well, I'm so excited to hear that you're writing a sequel, Kate, and I really look forward to reading what else you do next. So thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Chloe. I've absolutely enjoyed it. It's been a joy.
That was Kate Martin talking about her young adult novel, Are You Okay, Elliot Hart, which is out now and available to buy. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Or if you've subscribed already, it would be great if you could leave me a review. See you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.